Well, thank you very much for the kind introduction. It's wonderful to be here. I am going to be telling you about a technique where we can basically go into circuits of the brain, any circuit specifically, and adjust the activity. We can turn circuits up when they are underperforming, or we can turn them down if they're overperforming and causing difficulty. So we'll be able to adjust the dials on this machine that we call the brain using this technique called deep brain stimulation. So we all know that the functions of the brain are localized within certain circuits. There are circuits that control your movement, others that control vision, your appetite, your mood, whether you're happy or sad, whether you love or hate, your drive and ambition, your judgment, your empathy, your memory, and cognition. We are learning more and more about what the neural elements, where are the circuits in the brain that regulate these functions. And when these circuits are functioning normally, then you have normal brain function and there is no, you're functioning normally, there's no neurology or no psychiatry disease, no psychiatric disease. But when there is dysfunction, when these circuits malfunction, then you start running into problems. And if, for example, you have a misfunction in the movement circuit, then you might get Parkinson's disease. If you get malfunction in the circuit that regulates your mood, your happiness, or your sadness, then you get depression. And if you get dysfunction in a circuit that regulates and controls your memory and cognition, then you get Alzheimer's disease. So what I'm going to be telling you about is the possibility of intervening very specifically and surgically within all of these circuits in the brain to adjust their activity, to turn them either up or down to help patients who have disturbances in these functions. And this is going to be done with this technique called deep brain stimulation. And what this involves is placing electrodes in the brain. Patients are usually awake when we do this operation. We freeze the skin. We place an electrode in their brain and we hook it up to a pacemaker. And this is worn in their body. And we are able to adjust the output of this pacemaker with a remote control, very much like your television remote control. And we are able to deliver electricity to the tip of this electrode 24 hours a day. So the patients have this in their body and the electricity is delivered constantly to whatever part of the brain you've placed this electrode in. And as we've gotten better and better at understanding where the circuits are and to pinpoint the malfunctioning circuits, we've gotten better and better at putting these electrodes in the brain. And we can put these electrodes anywhere in the brain, anywhere throughout the brain. So we have the surgical precision to put these electrodes really anywhere in the brain. And indeed, over 120,000 people in the world now have received DBS, mostly for Parkinson's disease. And so let me show you what that looks like. Here is one of these electrodes in the brain in an actual patient with depression. And this is in the area that Dr. Drabitz was mentioning, the subgenual cingulate area. You see the electrode here. This is the area that is placed in for depression, for example. So indeed, this area of deep brain stimulation is one of the fastest growing areas in neurosurgery. This is counting the number of papers published over the last 30 or 40 years. You see that there's really an exponential rise in the number of publications. Over 1,000 papers now per year are published using this technique. And so this is a very exciting area in neuroscience. And it's exciting because we're able to go anywhere in the brain and adjust the activity of these areas in the brain. Now, what kind of disorders are being looked at? And we've recently looked at what disorders are being treated or possibly studied using deep brain stimulation, and there are a large number of them. In fact, there are approximately 30 trials of phase one trials. These are 30 experiments where, for the first time, electrodes are being placed in areas of the brain that sometimes have never received electricity before, and we're going to see what this can do. So other than Parkinson's disease, as you heard, there are many trials for depression, for obsessive compulsive disorder, for Alzheimer's, for dystonia, which is a movement disorder, for epilepsy, for drug addiction, for headaches, for anorexia, for bipolar disorder, for chronic pain, for Huntington's, Tourette's. It may be possible to wake up patients in coma by putting electrodes in the brain to stimulate the brain, to stimulate the reticular activating system. It may be possible to control appetite, to suppress appetite by putting electrodes in the areas of the brain that regulate appetite and turn down appetite. So it is also being looked at in the case of obesity and so on. So in sum, every neurologic and psychiatric disorder possible is being considered for deep brain stimulation. Now, let me show you a real example of this. This is a patient with Parkinson's disease, and this is a patient that we operated on in 1997 with Parkinson's disease, and she has electrodes in an area of her brain called the subthalamic nucleus, which is part of the movement circuit. And I'm going to show you what she's like with the stimulator turned off, and then we're going to turn it on. So she already has these electrodes in her brain and the pacemaker in. So the electrodes are turned off right now, and you can see that she has some tremor, some shaking. Okay, and you see the shaking that she has. We're going to turn the stimulator on now. It's on. And this works instantly. As soon as we turn it on, the tremor goes away instantly. And as soon as we turn it off, the tremor reappears. Now, this lady I operated on 18 years ago in 1997. These batteries last for about 5 years, so she's on her fifth battery because every 4 years she comes in to have her battery replaced. And even today, after these neurons in her brain receiving 1 billion impulses, because it's on at 130 impulses per second, as soon as I turn it off, the tremor comes back immediately. Even though these neurons have been bombarded with all this electricity, as soon as you turn off the electricity, the neurons go back to their bad habits and they cause the tremor, and as soon as I turn it on, the tremor goes away. So this is not a cure, it's really a lifelong treatment, and it's really a way of changing the activity of the neurons in the circuit. And changing the activity of the neurons in the circuit causes an improvement in the tremor in this case. From Parkinson's disease, which is now done throughout the world, we then tackled another disorder called dystonia. We were asked to see this young boy who lives in Jerusalem who has this terrible disorder called dystonia, and it causes a twisting movement. This is a genetic disorder. This is called DYT1 dystonia. There are 8 children in the family, and it's autosomal dominant. 5 of them are affected by this disorder. It causes twisting of the arms and legs and twisting of the trunk like this. And this started in one leg and then the other. And then within a year or two, he's 9 years old when we saw him. This started when he was 6. And by the time he was 7, he could no longer walk. And he was becoming progressively crippled. And his body was twisted. The only way he could get around was walking around like this. Interestingly, if you do an MRI, you take a picture of the brain, it looks completely normal. So this is not a structural problem. This is a functional problem. There's a functional problem in the brain. So when we saw this boy, we didn't know what to do. We weren't familiar with what kind of surgery could help him. But on the basis of what we had done in Parkinson's disease, we thought, where there's also a dystonia, we thought we might be able to help him. So we decided to operate on this boy, not knowing whether it would be useful, not knowing whether it would help him or not. But clearly, this boy, if he continued like that, he would probably die within a year or two from respiratory illnesses and so on. So we decided to operate on this boy. Not knowing whether it would work or not, not knowing what to expect. And here we did his surgery. He went back to Jerusalem, where he lives, and here he is after the operation. So this is completely unexpected. We did not know if this was going to work or not. And again, this is caused by malfunction in the circuit that controls movement, and simply adjusting the activity of this circuit can result in a very striking effect, as you see here. So on the basis of the results in this boy, this kind of operation dystonia is now done throughout the world, and there have been hundreds of children in the world that have now been treated. And this is one of the best operations that one can do, is take children like this and give them back the ability to walk by putting some electricity in the right place in the brain. We then started developing an interest in depression, and you've heard Dr. Revitz speak about this. And the reason we developed an interest in this is because it's so common. So according to the World Health Organization, this is one of the leading causes of disability with over 120 million people. 9% of women and 6% of men are affected at any time with depression, so it's very prevalent. Throughout the world, there are about 800,000 suicides per year, and this is often in the context of depression. And, of course, there are treatments for depression, including medications and psychotherapy and even electroconvulsive therapy. But despite these treatments, there's somewhere in the order of 10 to 20% of patients who fail. And these are said to have treatment-resistant depression. So these were the patients that we were interested in, and we wanted to know where in the brain are you going to go to treat depression? Because it's all about, this is all about being in the right place. It's like real estate. The three most important things are location, location, and location. You have to know where to go in the brain to treat this. So with my colleague Helen Mayberg, we found a candidate area, this area called the subgenital area, Area 25. And it turns out that, as Dr. Drevin said, that this area is hyperactive. This is the increased blood flow in patients with depression. It turns out that this is the sadness area of the brain. If I take any one of you and make you sad, this area of the brain will light up. And so in patients with depression, this area is on overdrive. It's as if the thermostat is set too high. And the sadness area of the brain is excessively active. And the rest of the brain, these frontal areas you see here, are blue because they're underactive. And so it looks like in depression, there's overactivity of sadness areas and underactivity in the executive areas, the areas involved in planning and execution. So we placed electrodes in this area, this overactive area, with the idea to see if we could turn it down. Could we turn down the thermostat to a more normal range? And indeed, after 3 or 6 months of stimulation, we were able to turn down the area. So it went from red to blue. And the areas that were previously shut down have now come back online. So you see them here in red. And so we were indeed able to reverse this metabolic defect in the brain. And in many of these patients, they have recovered from their depression. So this is currently in clinical trials. And we will see whether this could become a therapy for patients with chronic depression that have failed everything else and could receive deep brain stimulation in this target. So I've told you about using electricity to adjust the activity of circuits that control movement in Parkinson's and dystonia. I've told you about the possibility of using electrical stimulation to control mood circuits in the context of depression. Is it possible to treat circuits that control your memory? Is it possible to regulate memory circuits? And here we're interested, of course, in Alzheimer's disease. And as you quite well know, this is a very worldwide, a huge problem. Currently, it's estimated there's about over 40 million people with Alzheimer's in the world. This is projected to reach a doubling or tripling in the next 30 years. And in fact, worldwide, about $604 billion are spent treating Alzheimer's. And as Mary, as you said, this is really an epidemic. And it's based on the aging of our population and based on the huge costs of taking care of these patients. So we wondered whether it's possible to stimulate the circuits in the brain that regulate memory and cognitive function, and we've chosen to stimulate in this area of the brain called the fornix to see if one can activate this circuit and whether this might help patients with Alzheimer's. Now, it turns out that in Alzheimer's, there's a defect in areas of the brain where the brain stops using glucose. The brain shuts down. So as you know, the brain uses glucose. This is seen in a PET scan, which measure the areas in red are the normal utilization of glucose by the brain. The brain uses a lot of glucose, even though it only weighs 2% of your body. It uses 25% of the glucose in your body. And so normally the cortex uses a lot of glucose, but as you develop Alzheimer's, then there's areas of the brain that are shut down and they no longer burn fuel. They no longer use glucose. And it's as if you have a huge blackout. So this is at night and a blackout in northeastern North America. And it's as if there's a huge blackout in areas of the brain in Alzheimer's disease. These areas of the brain are shut down. They're not working. And the question is, are the lights out forever? Or can you turn them back on? Is there a possibility of restoring power to these areas of the brain that are no longer on? So what we did was we stimulated these areas of the brain, the fornix, and we saw what happens to glucose utilization. This is the target. So I'm a neurosurgeon, so I can't resist not showing a picture of the brain. And so this is indeed a human brain. And this is the area that we're stimulating. It's called the fornix. This is a huge highway of 1.2 million axons that are myelinated. And what we do is we put electrodes not in the fornix because that would damage the axons, but we put it beside the fornix so that we stimulate these axons. And we're able to hook up these electrodes to try to stimulate this circuit, as you've seen here. And this is what it looks like. Here's the first human being in the world with Alzheimer's disease that has a DBS electrode. Here's the electrode, this big dark black thing. And right behind it is the fornix. And the idea is to turn on this electrode and have the electricity reach the fornix and stimulate the axons of this circuit. So this is what we found. Our patients with Alzheimer's, these are the first 6 patients. At baseline, compared to normal, they had areas of the brain that were shut down, and these are the areas in blue. So indeed, in the temporal and parietal lobe of the brain, the lights were out, which we already knew. And the normal expectation over time is that the areas where the lights are out would expand, so the areas of darkness would get bigger and bigger. But that's not what happened. What happened when we stimulated these patients, and this is again chronically, is that we were able to increase glucose utilization in these brain areas, here in the temporal lobe, here at 1 month, and here at a year. So the message here is that indeed the lights are out in Alzheimer's disease, but there is someone home, and it is possible to turn the lights back on. And we think this is very exciting, because if we're able to convince these areas of the brain that are shut down to once again function, it means that their functions may return. And this, I think, is a ray of hope for patients with Alzheimer's disease. So we're now in clinical trials to test whether this could be safe and efficient, and whether this could be a new therapy to treat patients with Alzheimer's disease. So in conclusion, there is a large unmet need in both neurologic and psychiatric disorders. For me, there is no distinction between neurology and psychiatry. It's all about the brain. The brain is the organ that is malfunctioning, and it is a question of going into the right place to pinpoint where the disturbance is in the brain and to try to modulate it, try to improve it, try to turn it up if it's underperforming, try to turn it down if it's overactive. It is quite clear that one can reach every circuit in the brain. We can pinpoint these disturbances. We can intervene specifically within these circuits. And we can be very specific and only affect that circuit and not have collateral side effects, because we're very specific as to where we place these electrodes. We can put it in within 1 millimeter of specificity. It's also quite clear that one can use electricity to modulate the activity of these circuits. One can change the activity of motor circuits, like in Parkinson's disease and dystonia. One can change the activity of mood circuits, like in depression. And one can change the activity of cognitive circuits, like in Alzheimer's, as I told you. So I foresee that these techniques will expand, that we will be able to use this throughout the world to treat many psychiatric and neurologic conditions. I think that it will be necessary for this to move forward to assemble all the basic science, like the work that we've heard about today, the knowledge, the biology of the brain, how do these symptoms appear when someone has a specific psychiatric symptom, where does it come from in the brain, can we pinpoint, can we find out where it's coming from, and this will tell us where to intervene. It also involves multidisciplinary work in terms of, you know, molecular biologists, scientists, radiologists, neurosurgeons, neurologists, psychiatrists. So it is a tremendous effort to everyone to work together and to accomplish things that none of us could do on our own. And of course, with this too, there's also the multidisciplinary work that is acquired across geographic entities as well. So we need to work with our colleagues throughout the world. And working together, the hope is that we may be able to help many more patients. Thank you very much.